Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
That's how we kick off Sheldon's feature. Hello, Sheldon.
Hi, how are you doing?
Welcome, welcome. Lyra.
Yes, and here's Lebo as well.
Yes, absolutely.
We've got everyone. I mean, the last few weeks, you've been bringing some people on here, right?
Hey?
It's always some interesting person.
So obviously, Lebo, you've met Lebo. Lebo Shile, who's a poet. She's here with us to enjoy our wonderful...
Oh, thank you, Sheldon. I appreciate it.
And we love Lyra. And this was before the big blow up, right? Oh, my love. She was still with... Arthur,
Triple Nine Productions.
She was still with Triple Nine Productions.
Oh my God, was she still with
Triple Nine? Yes.
This is her first
This
album.
Was before Feel Good.
Yes.
This was still then.
Yes. The
early days. But before I get there, I just wanted to say, you know what I think is so beautiful about poetry, just getting to you.
Thank you, sweetheart.
Is that the beauty of poetry is that it's the origins of music.
Thank you for saying
because
that.
Because without poetry, we wouldn't have music. And so the idea of distilling a full story into a few stanzas.
Yes.
That's the art of music and poetry. It's the same art.
Thank you so much.
Of being able to tell a whole story.
It's true.
Within 2 minutes.
A poem and a song do what a novel does in 200 pages in a few lines.
Exactly.
And it's an immersive experience as well.
Indeed.
For people who... And it's an interactive experience. And it's a physical experience. Yeah. The way music resonates with your body.
Exactly.
You know, poetry does the same thing.
Exactly. And so...
And does it do... For you, as the poet,
yes,
like what it does for us, the audience.
Wow. Writing and performing, for me, feel like a heightened state of connection.
Yes. Hmm.
And in that moment, it feels like I'm aware of every... when I'm on stage, I'm aware of all the energies, all the person who's looking that way, the one who's giving me eyes, the one who's crying, the one who's... And I feel... And eventually, you know, I stop paying attention to the individual energies and it becomes a collective energy, which is really beautiful.
Yeah.
And then writing feels like... It feels like listening to a distilled voice that's coming from a source that is everywhere and nowhere, inside of me, outside of me, at the same time.
Yeah.
It's like channeling.
It is.
So
indeed.
Does it flow through you?
Is it a process? And are some poems?
Yes.
Some poems more difficult to write than others?
Every poem is difficult to write. Every writer hates writing and loves writing.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So some poems will come out like fully fledged, completely
in one piece.
But that's exceptionally rare. Mm. You know, I am a nerd. I am pedantic.
You read.
I read. I write. I rewrite.
Because
I rewrite.
Every word means something.
This is the thing with the poem.
Because everything's distilled into like one page.
Yes.
And so that is the beauty and the art of music and poetry, because it's about trying to, like, the story is being told in not only the words but the emotion that is reflected in whatever you're communicating,
and the rhythm too.
Exactly.
I mean, you write poetry for the ear as well, right?
Exactly.
Even when you read poetry on the page, you tend to read aloud. You're hearing the voice in your mind,
exactly.
And that voice has its own rhythm, and it's immersed in the rhythm that the writer has put down.
Yeah.
So it's the relationship between sound and meaning
and beat
and text and beat.
Yeah.
It's all intermingling.
Yeah.
All
because
the time.
It's like the whole concept of like an artwork can communicate 1,000 words.
Yes.
And essentially what you're doing with music and poetry is you're doing the same thing but with sounds and beat and music and words, and you're doing the same thing in this very distilled kind of environment. And it's quite interesting because you've got a novel which is like 500 pages,
yes,
and you've got like a screenplay that's however long.
Yes, yes, yes.
But here you've got like X amount of time, and you've got to communicate all of those emotions and all of that content within a very limited space.
It's high concentrated, potent meaning. I mean, 10 lines can change your life. You can still keep coming back to those 10 lines for the rest of your life,
and with different meaning every time.
Absolutely.
When do you listen to music, Lil?
All the time. I listen to music. I've got my apps. I listen to music in the bath. I listen to music when I'm writing.
Is it constantly on?
Not constantly, but I know when I'm missing music. Mm. You know, I listen to music when I'm cooking. I listen to music when I'm in the morning. I listen to music. It's an elemental part of my life.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah.
And when you're writing?
You know, sometimes, well, if I get commissioned to write a work and I know that in the performance and the production, then we have to have musical accompaniment, then I will write with that music,
got
right?
You.
But I find if I'm struggling, if I'm really struggling to get the, you know, the white noise out of your head, you know, the inner critic, the politicians, the distraction, their news headlines.
Yeah.
Sometimes, the noise. I find like, lo-fi hip-hop beats you know, but it has to be something, or even like jazz or something, you know, just something that has a soundscape. If I start hearing text, if I start hearing lyrics, then it distracts me from what it is that I need to say. If I do listen to something that does have lyrics, it has to be something I'm very familiar with, like a song that I know, like the back of my, like I know it, like in my body, like Lyra,
like a family.
It's like a family, so I'm not tripping on the lyrics because I know the song so well.
It's just,
you know,
flow.
Like a
yeah. I can listen to Feel Good like 50,000 times. It's Lyra's music is so uplifting.
Yes,
you know, it just that you can't help but listen to it and feel a sense of joy and feel a sense of optimism. So she's somebody that I turn to when I feel like, oh God, I'm sliding into the darkness. My inner troll is trolling. You know, she's somebody who I'm like, I habitually over many years I turn back to Lyra and I'm just like, oh my God, this music is still so uplifting.
Why did you choose Lyra?
So, well, because it's Women's Month and we were choosing different females, and I thought, you know, like, I think context is such an important thing, and that's why you were saying the 10 lines. You can revisit those 10 lines many times, and they'll have a different meaning every time.
Every single time.
And I think the message of Lyra sort of like rings differently now with her current situation and in the current situation that we're all in at the moment. And I thought that from a contextual point of view was quite an interesting thing to look at. But so just Lyra, she started singing when she was 16. She was highly influenced by Miriam Makeba, Stevie Wonder, Aretha Franklin, Nina Simone. These names keep on coming up every week. It's like everyone's inspired by the same people. I mean, Stevie Wonder's my go-to guy.
Oh, like I wish I wrote.
Exactly.
As I'm gonna play, as played at my funeral. That is a poem. He was 26 years old when he wrote that. I can't believe that.
It's unreal.
And he is a real poet.
Ooh.
Because he can't see, so the way he paints with words is unbelievable. But anyway, so Stevie Wonder, all of these guys, and she was inspired by this and started even writing her own music at the age of 16. And after school, she studied accounting and even worked in the accounting in the accounting field. And then she was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I need to step away from this. She gave notice at her work and she decided she was going to pursue a career in music. And this is about the time that I met her. And this is like something that really struck me, was like this person who was very focused. Apparently when she resigned, she designed a 5-year plan about like where her career was going to. And that's the woman that
meticulous.
I met. She's meticulous. She knew what she wanted. She knew how to budget for that. Forbes magazine says that she's worth $35 million. $35 million. That's 35 times 2. That's 600 million rand. That's what they say. Look, I don't know if it's
Forbes
a true...
Forbes said this about Lyra.
Forbes magazine. But anyway,
Lyra, girl from Davyton, raised by her granny.
There we go.
Good for you.
And that is the story that I think is so important for people to know. And that is what Lyra represents, is this aspirational character.
Incredible.
Someone that decided, this is what I want for myself. I'm going to do everything in my power to achieve it. Unfortunately, with the first album, she was signed on by Arthur Mafokati, who gave her this big break. But the problem was that they were trying to push her more in a like quieto direction, and it was something that really didn't resonate with her. And eventually their paths went their separate ways because it wasn't going to work for her. She wanted to be true to herself. And I think that is such an important message, is that you've got to be true to yourself no matter what it is that you do.
For me, it is her betting on herself.
Yeah.
That always. I think makes Lyra who she is.
Exactly.
It was not going to be Arthur. It wasn't going to be another record label telling her and deciding for her who she must be in the music industry. It's her betting on herself. And sometimes it was difficult when she parted with her manager stroke husband.
Yes.
That was a big, big bump in her career.
Indeed.
But she made the call and she stuck with that call.
Exactly.
And she's, you know, she's facing all sorts of health challenges, as we all know. But watch her rise. I mean, have you seen her?
Yeah. She looks gorgeous.
And it's just like a miracle.
It is.
This is someone who's committing to herself and her life every single day.
Indeed.
And it's quite something to watch.
Indeed.
Should we take a break, everybody? Otherwise, I'm going to get into a little bit of trouble. Lyra, Miss Lyra.
That was obviously a big breakthrough song.
Iconic.
Feel Good.
Iconic.
And you can hear some Stevie Wonder there with the synths. You can hear the Stevie Wonder influences. So when she left Arthur Mafukati, she met a guy called Victor and Tsepo. And with Robin, they started on a whole new trajectory. And
Tsepo, the bassist, the guitarist.
Yes. And so these three basically started putting the infrastructure together that would create the ultimate Lyra. But I think Lyra was very much like the orchestrator. Like she knew what she wanted to achieve. And she was starting to put the people together that were going to assist her in getting to where she wanted to get to. And this song was written by Lyra and Victor and Tsepo. The three of them wrote it together and produced by Robin. She was recording, and I remember at the time because my friend RJ was recording at the same time, and she was recording there at the same time.
Oh, RJ Benjamin!
Yes.
Love him.
And 340 Mill was there as well.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
Everyone was there. It was basically out of a garage.
At Jazzworks.
Yes. In Randburg. And so that was like the environment, like the breeding ground for what eventually became the song. Essence Magazine says that the new sound that Lyra was creating was shifting the way that music was being done. So this was more like an Afro jazz kind of sound, which then became very popular. Like everyone was doing this Afro jazz sound that Lyra popularized with the song. The song was used in a commercial. It landed up winning a SAMA award, two SAMA awards, which she didn't. She got nominated with the Arthur Mafukati album, but didn't win. But with this, she won. So it was like she was coming into a full blossoming period.
Rebirth.
Total. Sorry, three SAMA awards for this.
Wow.
The album went triple platinum, so 150,000 units. Triple platinum in South Africa is huge. And it was like this big reawakening of who Lyra was. And it was, for me, it was like, if you believe in yourself and what you do enough, eventually all the universe will present itself.
And she's a master at branding. I mean, even if you think about her image from the first song,
All My Love,
you know, she had the hair. She came out with Feel Good and just changed everything.
I mean,
different. The gowns, the Afrocentric gowns and the couture and her natural hair and just putting this beautiful dark skin face and her beautiful smile forward. You could tell that I'm not surprised to hear you say that she orchestrated or was the architect of that entire team, because she's absolutely she's absolutely meticulous when it comes to her money, when it comes to her image.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember the one time we were doing like a rehearsal. It was for RJ Benjamin, and we were in her rehearsal space. She had her own rehearsal space. I mean, off one album, she had her own rehearsal space. She was sitting, we were rehearsing, and she was sitting at the back of the room, like typing away and writing notes. And I broke away from the rehearsal and went to sit with her. And I was like, "What are you doing?" She's like, "I'm planning." I'm like, "Girl,
plotting.
It's 9 o'clock at night. Who plans at 9 o'clock? She was like, this is what I'm doing, putting all of these plans together. And I was like, incredible. I've never met anyone in my career, maybe Proverb, who was that focused, that disciplined. And that really inspired me to instill that kind of discipline into my own career. Because I was like, that's aspirational. That is something to aspire to.
Mind-blowing. I remember going out to dinner with her one night many, many years ago. And, you know, we were at Hyde Park here up the road. And Lyra was on the phone the entire time. She's doing interviews. She's booking work. She's dealing with, like, logistics. She's dealing with flights. Like, until, I think we left the place at about 10 o'clock. But
hustling the whole time.
And that was her night off. I was like, this is what your peak looks like, right?
This is what
other people don't see.
Yes.
You know? They see the glamorous part of it. They see the covers. They see the endorsements.
You just arrived.
No, it looks like round-the-clock work. Yeah. And her schedule, I'm sure, from the time she wakes up at 5 o'clock in the morning is that rigorous.
Mm. Exactly. Mm. I mean, if you're thinking, like, people like, oh, overnight success. There was no such thing. I mean, she was 16. She started off with the writing and putting the music together and all of that stuff. And then in her 20s, and then Feel Good was like, she's into her 20s now, you know? Yeah. So
it takes 10 years to make an overnight success.
Yeah. And so she was no overnight success. No. It was hard work that got her to that place.
Mm. We're going to play some more music.
Yes.
What's the next song?
So the next song actually is a song called Iris.
Miss Lyra, Rise Again. And that was from what, 2009?
2014. Sorry, 2014.
You know, earlier on we spoke a little bit about the people she decided to assemble around her.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, I think that's her biggest talent. There's the talent, and then there's knowing who to work with and what it is, the vision, what it is that I want to achieve.
Exactly, because I think the thing and the secret to a lot of, like, big names' success is knowing that you cannot do everything. And being gracious enough to say, you know, what I'm good at is this. And I'm not good at these other things. And I need to put people in place that are going to be able to cover those things. Because you're not expected to be brilliant at everything. And I think people often get into this trap where it's like, I've got to be brilliant at everything. I've got to do everything. I've got to do everything myself. And then they land up burning out. And I think that is the secret to long-term success, is being able to put people in place that you can trust and that are going to fill the gaps that you cannot fill yourself.
The trust part is critical. I think what makes people like that, I know when I am being very controlling, it's because of trauma. It's because you've been burnt. It's because you've had people who are inconsistent, people who are disloyal, people who sell you out, people who undercut you, people, you know, so you end up just thinking like, you know what? I'm not doing this. But actually, you won't elevate unless you bring in people who are going to help you.
Oh, that's for sure. Because that is like the springboard. You know, like if you... like, I remember one of my lecturers once saying to me, do you want 100% of nothing or do you want 50% of something, you know?
Yeah.
And that, like, a lot of artists are very reluctant to let go of their creative output because they want to control it all themselves. But if you control it all yourself, there's no way it's ever going to get out.
You can't be precious.
Exactly.
You know, the Center for the Less Good Idea is based on that very principle, is that all art, everything that we create, I'm sure every song you write or every poem I write or every story you tell, there's the story you hear in your mind. And then through the process of bringing this out, what you create is actually an approximation of the energy that you imagined.
Exactly.
But it doesn't hit quite there, you know? But that's the magic. It's the less good idea.
It is
the
less good idea. That's the magic.
I'd never experienced somebody...
And going outside of your comfort zone.
Going outside of your comfort and celebrating your failures.
Yeah. Indeed. Which a lot because of people. Without failure, you cannot.
Let's
have
quickly
success.
Recap what's the center of a good idea. So you have this melting pot. I would say it's a melting pot. So artists just doing and being.
Oh, it's incredible.
Artistic.
I mean, some of the best contemporary artists across genre, from dancers, filmmakers, yeah. animators, people who build their own.
Writers, everybody.
Writers, yeah. everybody, performers, yeah. actors, people who build their own instruments. Mm. I mean, just like the most incredible creative talent. Of course, spearheaded by William Kentridge,
yeah.
celebrated contemporary South African artist, world renowned. So the Center for the Less Good Idea is his baby. Yeah. And when I saw William Kentridge's studio in Maboneng, he's got a studio at his house in where he stays, yeah. and then there's a studio in Maboneng, which is a carriage house, like an old factory, an old warehouse, right? Which I think back in the day was a carriage house, then it became a factory. But when you see the size of it, you can understand how William can imagine a play that runs across a bridge in Italy, where he can make literally a feature in a city a backdrop for a theatrical piece, mm-hmm. because he can see in scale. Mm-hmm. When you work on that scale, you're able to imagine, and you can populate that world with so many people and so many creatives. You know, so I mean, William Kentridge is like he's like an economy,
but
he's not indeed. Even an artist; he's an economy.
Couple of things well, that I think are fantastic are. About yeah, that's William true. Kentridge, that's and I mean, here we are steering off, but that's the point of this show.
But also, I mean. Icons like from Lyra to yeah. William Kentridge in the same
absolutely
yeah. Yeah.
but it's also that it's his idea but he's in it.
Mm.
I mean, people tell you he's not. It's not a, you know, it's not an idea on paper.
No.
With an, he's no. there in the no. workshops mm. with no. artists. And he's like, right there.
And like Lyra, yeah. an astute yeah. businessman.
Yeah. yeah.
But when, and like Lyra, when he's in the process of creation, he becomes a child.
He is.
He's completely vulnerable, yeah. completely open. And it's actually magic to
and
watch.
And that's why there's this big, in the academic world, they talk about like the process of creation
mm-hmm.
and the process of innovation.
Mm-hmm.
And so the creative process is a very insular process. Mm. It's a very like solitary process.
Mm.
And like when you say you play music, I can't play music when I'm creating music. Because
of course you can't. No.
Because I need silence
of course you can't,
to be
yes.
able to hear.
I hear you.
Because if I have music, then it pollutes what I'm trying to create.
Yes.
And I remember the one time I had an assistant and she was in my office and she came and she's like, oh, I'm going to play music. I was like, girl.
Not around here.
You're not going to play music. She's like, but this is a music office. I was like, but I cannot work with music because and then I'm, my focus is in the wrong place.
So what art form do you use to detox from your art? Like when you get duck of, do you have experienced that?
What?
Like when you are so frustrated. Do you ever experience the sensation of being frustrated with creation?
Yeah.
Being like so immersed in a project or being so immersed in a body of work that it's you get to the point where you it feels like to, it's like yeah, strangling yeah, yeah, you yeah. and you kind of need to detox.
Away. Yeah, yeah,
what's
yeah.
your go-to?
So usually what I'll do is I'll go for a run or
okay.
I'll go to gym
yeah.
or I'll do something completely unrelated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not necessarily physical. I could read a book, you mm-hmm. know, just to get my mind off of it. And the weird thing is, every time I do it, the answers come.
The idea comes.
Yeah.
That's true.
And so the process of creation and innovation. So creation is a very isolated, very insular. That's why you can be a child there, because you can be vulnerable in the creative process because it's insular. But the process of innovation is taking that insular idea and presenting it to people and then letting them dissect it and hone it and panel beat it into something that will generate an income.
It's a shared experience.
Exactly. And that's why the process of getting people involved in your art is what catapults it to the next level.
Collaboration.
Yeah. It's the innovation.
Exactly.
Bit
the innovation
where
part.
You get people to panel beat the thing
into
where you,
something
where you're not too precious.
Exactly. And at the moment I'm writing this article about Bob Marley and the Marley family. And even there, Bob Marley had a very specific idea of what he wanted to create in music. Unfortunately, that idea was not monetizable.
Mm-hmm.
And so it involved other people getting involved in his art to say, maybe you should do it more like this, and maybe you should add these elements to your music. And once that happened, he just went from being a Jamaican star to being an international superstar.
You see.
So you have to get people involved.
You need an outsider.
Otherwise, if you hold
but the
it
right
in,
kinds of people,
the right
folks,
kinds.
It's the right kind. For me, I'll tell you this: Lyra would not be the Lyra if she's stuck with Arthur.
No, never.
There,
no way.
Do you get my point?
Because the,
it's
the
right
vision wasn't
kinds
the same.
Of people.
Yeah.
It is
the vision
for
wasn't
you
the same.
For, and for your art. Somebody
exactly.
who sees you, who sees what it is that you actually want to say, even when you're not there.
Exactly.
About your work and your art.
Exactly. To align yourself with people that are like-minded. And that's the beauty of like all of these creative communities that are springing up everywhere.
Yeah.
It's about people that are like-minded collaborating with each other in order to create something that will not only benefit you, but will benefit a greater community.
Yeah.
And that's the you know, actually for South Africa and the space that we're in this country, the creative industries are the solution to job creation.
Preach, Bachele, please.
Because every artist is an entrepreneur. Artist is an entrepreneur, and every entrepreneur will employ people because you need people to be part of your creative process. And so if every artist is employing people, you're creating jobs for lots of people.
It's true.
More so than in the business world.
I mean, when you talk about what happened during COVID and how our sector completely shut down,
mm-hmm.
it's not just we who write or we who perform, we who are on stage or behind the mic. It's the drivers.
Yes.
It's the lady who makes Boerewors rolls outside
yes.
the gig.
Yeah.
It's the auntie who's selling earrings outside
exactly.
the gig. It's the lady who does the tailoring. It's a whole entire value chain of people who are attached to creative industries.
Mm-hmm. And it's the fashion people. It's the clothes people. It's the accountants. It's the lawyers.
It's the marketing people.
The PR people. The lighting people. The sound people. Every star has hundreds of people that
yes.
are making that thing happen.
Yes.
And so that is why it's such a powerful industry, the creative industries, because it involves so many people.
Yes. When you see these young kids on stage at like Afro Nation, I mean, now you look at what Amapiano is doing for South Africa globally, raising our profile. I mean, I'm on Instagram watching Pakistanis make Amapiano. I'm like, what? South Africa?
But you also know that South Africa is the biggest growing music economy of the world.
I was watching, I think it was Kamumpela at Afro Nation, and I was so impressed with the number of people on stage. You just see jobs, from the dancers to the DJ she's brought with her, the musicians, whoever did the costumes, you know, the management. You're just like, here's this young girl who's able to, there's 20 people being fed right now.
Exactly.
Because of this young girl relying on her talent. It's incredible.
It is incredible.
Hmm.
It is incredible.
Who feeds you? Who feeds you? The artist, the creator, the talent that is Lebo Mashile.
Oh, gosh. Other artists, I'm fed by creativity. I guess like every creative, you know, I got my little barrel of trauma in the chaos of South Africa. So, I mean, my making art is often a balm for being able to, that assists me with being able to cope with the darkest and most complex parts of life, you know, that what I don't understand, I work out in my art, you know. But then at the same time, I mean, it's my greatest joy as well, and the joy of experiencing other people's creative process. I mean, I love going to galleries and to the theater, and especially since COVID. I remember the first time I walked into a theater for a gig. I mean, it was one of those closed live screening events that we were doing that time. But walking into the theater, I cried, I wept, but I'm grateful for it because it was like, there was a, you know, I mean, I've been in doing this for 20 whatever years. And I think I'd gotten to a point where I was not taking it for granted, but just like
a little jaded, maybe.
It was just there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a Boerewors role. It's another one, you know. But that made me, it impressed upon me the sacredness of what it is that we do. And I feel like since we've reemerged from the world, into the world, it's like South African artists have so much to say. All of a sudden, I opened my eyes and it was like, what? Every show I went to, whether, you know, Simpiwe Dana or Ladysmith Black Mambazo or theater production by, you know, Momo Matsunyani, or it just feels like we're in this heightened state of creation right now, you know. And it's interesting, I think, because in times of political upheaval, in times of, you know, societal chaos, the art slaps, and right now the art is so insane.
What do you think it is about us South Africans? Because there is that thing, you've traveled the world, you've lived around the world, and you know it, there is this thing that South Africans have, that creative muscle, that beat within their soul, that speaks different to anybody else in the world. What do you think that is?
I think it's definitely grounded in this earth that we come from. It's grounded in our history. It's grounded in the diversity, all these cultures colliding and people coming together and influencing each other and literally altering each other's DNA, you know? There's a warmth in South Africa. There's an openness. As much as we are violent and hectic and chaotic, we are a lot also. but you know, when you...
But are we really violent? I don't really see... I find that I find South Africans to be a very celebratory kind of people.
We are everything. We are loud. We are expressive in every way, in good and bad, but very loudly.
Do you know how much international artists love performing here because of the way our audiences respond?
Yeah, exactly.
Because we are expressive. We're on stage.
The audience is on stage
and
with you.
And we celebrate everything, whether it's rock music or whether it's R&B. People are celebrating creativity. And I think we are generally a creative country.
Yeah.
People, because we're creative, we appreciate other art.
Yeah.
And the only way to enhance your art is by experiencing other art, because it adds depth and layers to your art by experiencing other art, even unrelated art.
Yes, go to a gallery.
Yeah.
Go and watch the ballet. Go in and just expand your horizons and cross that threshold of curiosity. I mean, it's interesting, like we've been speaking about Lyra the whole time, and Lyra crossed that threshold of courage, of fear.
Absolutely.
To become who she is, you know? And I think each of us does that every day in small ways, you know? So just cross the threshold of your curiosity. For a lot of people, I think people think that the arts are for certain people, and the arts are for everybody. If you've never been to a gallery, go. Take a virtual tour. You know, it's right here. We are here opposite the most beautiful galleries.
Isn't that Circa?
In the city.
Circa is my favorite building in the country.
It's stunning.
Right now, that's my favorite building in the country.
Stunning.
What's your dream for yourself?
Oh, I want to be a good ancestor to my children. I want to be a good ancestor to my kids. I want when my kids and their kids are going through kak, I want them to be like, yo, there was that gogo. Oh my God. She was brave and strong and loud, and she loved us. I want my love to survive in my children.
Sure. It's been such a pleasure having you. Thank you for coming.
I love you so much.
Thank you for being a part of this.
I love you so much. I would never say no to you. How?
That's it, folks. That's how we end the show for today and for the week. Thank you, Sheldon.
Thank you always.
What a pleasure.
Thank you always for being a part
of our wonderful family. Thank you.
Thank you, man.
Thanks, everybody. I'll be back on Monday at 8.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.